So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
What on earth does it mean to be demisexual? We talk about transgender, LGBTQA, you name it. But that was a new one for me. I hadn't heard this one yet, just like I hadn't heard cisgender. I'll even break down yet again what cisgender is. But joining me a little later on during today's show is actually my husband, Gabriel. We're going to discuss what being demisexual is and how it's really not that unique, okay? I know everyone wants to be a unicorn today, but come on. We'll explain it. I'll tell you what it is and why there's a problem with people identifying in this way, but perhaps it'll tell us a little bit as to why people move in this direction in terms of an identity with regard to their sexuality, because it really is quite telling as we walk through this piece of information. We'll also discuss the fact that new statistics have come out and 2019, we saw another plummet in terms of the number of single people getting married. Why is this happening? What can we learn from it? What, and more importantly, what do you need to know to be an advocate for marriages? To understand the struggles that young people truly are going through, that perhaps you can be the person in a friend or family or even stranger's life when the opportunity arises to help them over that hump. It might be finances. It might be fear of commitment. It could be a broken sexuality or a broken home experience that they experienced. So we'll discuss that and more. Again, my husband Gabriel joining me in just a little bit here on Trending. If you'd like to join the conversation, have something to say, the number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can contact me on my Instagram page. How about canceling Christmas this year? This is a funny one because over the last, I would say, 10 years, we've seen a lot of examples where people say, whoa, did you hear about this school district punishing a child for wearing something or saying something having to do with celebrating Christmas? And next thing you know, a kindergartner is upset and disgruntled because their faith come under attack and they don't know how to handle it. Or banning Bibles. These are things that we had seen starting about pretty significantly 10 years ago here in the United States. It's calmed down over the last couple of years, but COVID has been an interesting opportunity to, quote, cancel Christmas and Thanksgiving yet again. In fact, in some states, such as my own home state here of California, we are starting to hear things such as another stay-at-home order and incredibly insane restrictions on the government telling us what we can and can't do to practice a religious holiday. But what can we learn from this? It's interesting. Some people aren't canceling Christmas. In fact, the famous Khloe Kardashian from Keeping Up with the Kardashians has made the announcement on Twitter that there is no plan to cancel the family Christmas Eve party for the Kardashian family. Now, this is receiving a lot of backlash on Twitter. But what really stood out to me was how we live in a culture right now that is so focused on a minimalist movement. Everything from our decorations, our decluttering, becoming non-hoarders, even to our food and this desire for simple ingredients, being able to read each name on the ingredient list, and maybe keeping it under 10 or so in terms of each item that you eat. Minimalism is in. But why isn't it in when it comes to Christmas? I'm wondering if this Christmas might be the opportunity for us to regain a better understanding and kind of hash out perhaps some of the distractions we've allowed to enter in. I'm not saying to cancel Christmas. I'm not even saying to not get together with family. I think this is a huge infringement from the government to say that we can't go to church in some areas, to say that our numbers at church should be limited. It's a huge infringement for them to say who can and can't come to dinner for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But what I am saying is that COVID offers us an opportunity to declutter how we handle Christmas. Now, this was seen recently in the example of a Spanish priest by the name of Father Javier Leoz, who wrote a poem titled, Will There Be Christmas? He's actually called and congratulated by Pope Francis on this lovely poem, and I'd like to recite a few pieces from the poem from you. He asks, Will there be Christmas? Over and over again. First time he says, of course, more silent and with more depth. More like unto the first one when Jesus was born in solitude. Imagine that moment. Take yourself back roughly 2,020 years from now. And the birth of Christ was relatively quiet. Although heaven rejoiced and the angels brought their triumphant, glorious, and joyful songs to the earth, we didn't know what was happening. Just like the moments where Christ comes down upon the altar, the Holy Spirit comes down, and the bread and wine are transformed into the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. It's not a momentous occasion. It's simple. It requires faith. It requires that we pay attention and we prepare our hearts, bodies, and souls for this moment. So, although we may be told, or may there may be an infringement of the state and the government upon our gathering, let's read a little bit more about Will There Be Christmas from this poem. He goes on to say, without streets overflowing with people, with our hearts burning for the one who is about to arrive. So sure, San Diego has this tradition of Christmas lighting, as we call it. You see, we don't get snow, we don't get all the weather, so what we do get is the fact that we can really bling our houses out for Christmas. Now, there's a whole list in San Diego of, like, the best neighborhoods to go to, and people in droves are usually out in the streets, and it's more intense than any type of Halloween trick-or-treating. People come out in droves from out of town for Christmas, in hordes on the streets and private neighborhoods. It's incredible. Every single night of the week leading up to Christmas and even the days after. Well, I don't think we're going to have that at the same level this year. What about Black Friday shopping? Will people be trampled during Black Friday shopping? I have a sneaky suspicion there's still going to be a lot of Black Friday shopping. That said, although there might be a different flow in terms of quantity of people in various places, nothing changes for us as people of faith. Our hearts should be burning and yearning for God. Another comment in the poem is made, COVID-19 will never be able to reach the heart or soul of those who put their hope in their high ideal in heaven. Perhaps you found yourself troubled at moments of uncertainty in this current climate, but in reality, God should be there sustaining us if we would only allow Him to be our ideal, to direct us toward heaven, and to let go of all the confusion and frustration that occurs, whether death, joy, whatever it might be that comes, we are able to maintain, stabilize. Guess what? That's what we're going to talk about coming up next. Preparing for Advent before it's even here, so that we can really take the most out of this Advent season that you might not realize is just as important as that Lent season for prayer, fasting, and so much more. I'll be right back.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm already talking about Advent because Advent has become one of my favorite liturgical seasons. So I think it was about 10 years ago, I went on a retreat right at the beginning of Advent out in the desert. Beautiful, you know, part of Southern California that most resembles the Holy Land. And I learned for the first time that Advent was a liturgical season of penance. What? Are you kidding me? I thought Advent was about putting up Christmas lights, decorating Christmas trees, baking, and singing Christmas songs. I was a little shaken when I realized I've been doing it all wrong. And then I learned more about this season, Advent. We're preparing for Christ's coming. And in order to prepare for someone's coming, I have company tonight. And I'm cleaning out my house. I'm making sure that there's good nourishment in the home. I'm making sure I have enough energy to be present to people. You know, think about all the things you do to prepare for company. There's a lot. There's a purging. There's a self-giving that occurs. I'm also learning this about Advent in a very different way. In fact, I've got 9 months of Advent this year because our baby girl is due during Advent. And so, again, there's this purging. What do I need to get rid of to make space for her in my closet? What do we need to add on to make sure there's a bed? To make sure that we are mentally and emotionally prepared to prepare for the birth? All of these different things. And so, it's exciting for me. I'm thanking the Lord that I have this opportunity to really extend my Advent season even longer than just the liturgical one. Because Advent is such a special time. And I just want to read from you. So this is part of my Advent homework this year. And I'm going to start it early because I know we're expecting a baby and I do not want to miss the benefits of this season. I want to be in a good routine before baby comes and disrupts everything. So I'm actually going to be reading a book by St. Alphonsus Liguori, the sweetest little priest, gave it to my husband last year during Advent. And I was totally jealous waiting for him to finish reading it during Advent. And so I've had to wait till this year. Well, I could have read another time, but the book is by my man, St. Alphonsus Liguori. It's The Incarnation, Birth, and Infancy of Jesus Christ. This book is going to be incredible. There are so many little lines in there, but I chose this one to read to prepare us. Turning to the Blessed Virgin Mary, who had that Advent, had that long waiting period for Christ. At the end of one of the chapters, St. Alphonsus says, making a prayer to the Mother Mary, Mary, my hope, mother of beautiful love, do thou help me in loving the God of love with all my heart and forever. Okay, I think this is our motto this Advent. Asking Our Lady to help us in loving God with all our heart and forever. That's the goal. It's not mushy. It's not cute. That's the goal. We need a companion with us during our Advent journey. I've chosen Our Lady and St. Alphonsus. What about you? So let's talk a little bit more about what Advent is and then what we're going to do to prepare, because I'm so excited and you have homework because you need to prepare for Advent this year in order to make it an incredible season for you as well. So first, remember that we have the purple color during Lent. Well, guess what? We have purple as well for Advent. Purple liturgical season, pointing toward penance, preparation, and sacrifice. Just like we have prayer, fasting, almsgiving as a fundamental part of Lent, it's there too for Advent. That purple symbolizes the penance, preparation, and sacrifice. So what penances will we give ourselves? Or will God give us if we're open to them, if we're paying attention? Because sometimes we don't even have to create those penances. God will give them to us. Think about COVID during Lent 2020. Oh, it came our way, okay? Preparation. How are we going to prepare for Christ's coming? And three, how are we going to make a sacrifice for his coming? This is the opportunity to do two things. Having to do with attachment and detachment, for us to evaluate our attachments and then figure out what we need to detach from. So this is your homework, and I really do mean it. Be a student of your faith. This is the opportunity this Advent. And in order to be a good student during Advent, you need to prepare now. Just like we should prepare for Lent before Lent comes, rather than a weekend being like, oh crap, I still haven't figured out what I'm doing for Lent. Well, this is your opportunity weeks in advance to touch on what your plan is for Advent. Sit down over the next couple of days and ask yourself, how will I attach to God and divine things? And second, how will I detach from those disordered things that are getting in the way? So think about this Advent as attachment and detachment. Really simple. That's going to be your guidepost for what to do this Advent. So first, how will I attach to God? For example, how am I going to make time and space, not just for putting up a Christmas tree, going Christmas tree shopping and baking cookies, and for all those extra holiday parties that I truly do hope are still occurring, okay? I really do hope you get to have those Christmas celebrations this year still. But how am I going to make the time for God? Perhaps I'm going to start attending daily Mass during Advent. Maybe I'm going to read this awesome book by St. Alphonsus Liguori called The Incarnation, Birth, and Infancy of Jesus Christ. Or another book. I try to read a different book each Advent. I'll post a couple of those on my social media over the weekend. If you keep an eye out on my Instagram, you can find me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And I'll tell you some of the things I've liked about these various books I've read over Advent and how you can benefit from them. But what else? How am I going to make time for prayer? And this is a big one, for confession. So if we're going to attach ourselves to God, this requires time. So my greatest tip for attachment is know how you want to attach, but put it in your calendar. It's simple. You make a dinner date. You make plans for friends to come over. You make plans for rest. You tell people when I have had enough and you just need to be left alone for a few days. Well, let's do that with our faith. Reevaluate and prioritize. Second, how will I detach from those disordered things? Now, it might not be something bad per se, but it might just be something that I don't quite have the right attachment to or is distracting me. It might be that I'm too focused on Christmas shopping and getting the right gifts for others or those gifts that I myself really, really want. It could be that you're having a hard time detaching from your work to appreciate the season. So often, more and more people aren't making any time to take off over the Christmas season. It's shocking working in a secular realm sometimes that you may not even get Christmas Day off anymore. That day is no longer protected in the same way that it used to be from your employer overstepping their boundaries. But I think first that started by us overstepping our boundaries and willing to say yes, 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 being that yes man. And so are we overly attached to our work and think that we're that necessary at our job that we can't pause? Remember, detachment from the world, to be in the world, but not of it. Detachment even from all of the incredible social media posts, memes, drama, information, and latest updates surrounding the election. That could ruin your Christmas season if you do not have a balance. It could totally prevent you from getting any extra prayer in leading up to Christmas or from forming good habits. It could even ruin the good habits that perhaps you did build up during COVID because you're all consumed yet again by your technology. Again, it's about balance. So I encourage you, again, to do your homework. How will I attach to God and divine things? And how will I detach from those disordered things? So ultimately, the goal this Advent is this: creating a foundation for your faith. By the way, joining me in just a few minutes will be my husband, Gabriel. We're going to be talking about why the marriage numbers have plummeted for new marriages each year. And also, what is demisexuality? That was a new one for me, just like I remember when I first came across cisgender, that all teen girls apparently need to come out as cisgender in like middle school. I'll explain that one too in just a little bit. It's crazy. But back to Advent here. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie on Relevant Radio if you're just joining us. So the goal is to form a contemplative spirit, not to pray a bunch of Hail Marys all day long, but to be in God's presence throughout your day as you go to sleep, for Him to be the first thing that you think about in the morning. This takes training. It takes habit. It takes detachment. Again, your homework, attachment and detachment that I just walked through. So to prepare us for this, we need to understand that God is this word called omnipresent. God is always present to us, but we aren't always open to acknowledging His presence. He's the greatest yearning of our hearts, but for some reason, and I'll talk about this more later with my husband Gabriel on the marriage topic, For some reason, we allow ourselves to just be confused by everything that's happening, death in the family, the election, COVID. So ultimately, what will get in the way of us growing this Advent? It's temptation. The problem is that temptation is real. In fact, exorcists discuss that the greatest demonic threat are our temptations that we experience. But do we take this seriously enough? Don't let yourself be under the influence of a demonic presence. And I'm not saying that you're obsessed or possessed by a demon. I'm saying that it's hard to battle those vices that we have, and that Satan is so glad if we fail at it. But listen, this is Father Chad Ripperger. He's an exorcist. And I'm going to play you a little bit of what he has to say about spiritual protection when he talks about the importance of never losing your state of grace.
Never, under any circumstances, lose your state of grace. The state of grace is your principal protection against diabolic influence. The odds of somebody becoming possessed or influenced in an extraordinary way who's in the state of grace is extremely rare. I've seen it, but it's extremely rare. The other side of it is, too, so never commit a mortal sin, period.
Period. Never commit a mortal sin and never lose your state of grace. Well, how is this done? In order to keep yourself spiritually protected, it requires humility. Breaking that diabolical influence on our lives, walking back into the path of Christ and the communion that we're all called to. And so regular confession is what is so important for us to turn toward. So let's go ahead and hear what Father has to say about regular confession and how it actually liberates us. This is Father Chad Ripperger.
In fact, in my own personal experience, sometimes the confession is more important, is more powerful in liberating somebody than actual solemn exorcism. Sometimes people will actually have an extraordinary diabolic influence, but it's on a very low level. And they'll just go to confession. And the priest gives them, and they confess the sin. And as they confess the sin, and then that removes, as St. Ignatius says, he says, once the sin is aired out, once the thing that the demons are influencing you over is aired out, they lose power over that. And then once you're restored to grace, you're protected. So that actually confessing the sins and getting absolution breaks their control over you to some degree. And in some cases, it can actually break extraordinary diabolic influence as long as if it's on a low level.
Did you hear that? By taking advantage of God's mercy. Totally free mercy. God's just waiting for you to come to that priest so that he can work through that priest in persona Christi for your sins to be forgiven. By our humility and walking into that confessional, not only are we healed and relieved, forgiven of the sins that we've committed, but it puts us outside of the grasp of Satan. This is so important because this is authentic freedom, regular confession. We've got to air it out. When I moved just a couple months ago, I was so bummed out because we were moving and someone walked into our bedroom and it was stuffy and someone said, man, it just like smells really bad in your room. And I'm like, I just moved here. Like I was so offended by the fact that they said that my room smelled bad. That for like the next week, I was really like sensitive to the smell of this room and it was fine. It just hadn't had a window open in who knows how long. But it kind of made me realize that when we don't kind of allow for things to be aired out, for things to be cleared out, there can be this lack of freedom. So if I just left the window open and didn't let any air in, I would have felt uncomfortable. It might have smelled uncomfortable. Same thing with confession. If we're not willing to name it, claim it, confess it, and then make reparation, do our penance, we're going to feel uncomfortable. It's going to start to stink. It's going to start to impact how we act. We might even be sensitive if someone even says something about the smell of the room or the sins that we've committed. You know, there's a sensitivity that begins to occur. And so what else can we do incorporated into this Advent? Well, it's important that we also fast. And so I want to encourage you, understand this, that demons cannot stand And this is what Father Ripperger said. Demons cannot stand bodies that fast. That is, demons want us to obey our bodies and our desires. But when we intentionally go about self-mortification, such as fasting and abstinence from various things, this actually puts our body back into check. It brings our body in subject to the intellect, to the will. And so there's this union of body and soul rather than a disconnect of the body and soul. And so I want to encourage you, do not be afraid to fast this Advent, to challenge yourself. Go to confession. You have a right to an anonymous confession. Go to a different parish if you're nervous or uncomfortable. Find a screen to hide behind. I'm there. I get it. I do it too. I really want to encourage you, do your homework and prepare for this Advent. Listen to Trending, by the way, via the podcast. You can head over to relevantradio.com/trending to enjoy. Have you ever heard of the word demisexual? Demisexual. I identify as demisexual. Isn't that interesting that there's so many definitions? I'm a unicorn. I'm LGBTQ. I'm transgender. I'm cisgender, which, by the way, cisgender is to literally just identify according to actually sexual complementarity. So you're a male and you're attracted to females. Yet for some reason, we're putting pressure on kids to come out as identifying as cisgender. But here's a new one I hadn't heard before. Demisexual. Joining me today on Trending is my guest, my husband, Gabriel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
Okay, so I was reading this article from the Huffington Post, and it's titled, I'm Demisexual, Here's What I Want You to Know. Now, this woman has recently become married, and she talks about the definition of demisexuality. She says, I'm attracted to someone only after I develop a deeper emotional connection with them. She goes on to say, the best way to describe it is I'm attracted to a person's personality before their body. I'm attracted to delectable details, not physical appearance. What's your initial reaction to this before we unpack?
It's so funny to me because I think that we are trying to be so unique when in reality we're just normal. And I that just it blows my mind that we're trying to find a label for something when it's just normality. Like, yeah, this is a normal thing to experience. Like,
but I want to be a unicorn. I really want to be a unicorn. Don't you understand?
Yeah. It's pretty much.
This is, you know, becoming new parents. This is one of those things where unicorns are a very popular children's item today because it's supposed to teach kids that you can be unique. You can be whatever you want. And it's so sad that we've taken the mythical creature of unicorns to tell kids you do you.
Yeah.
And as a parenting moment, I'm like, I don't want unicorns anywhere near my house because of what they, quote, represent.
Yeah, it's making me a little nervous.
You know, but it's a unicorn, and kids can have fun with glitter. They just can't have their glitter families, as we've talked about. So let's unpack this a little bit more. The author in the Huffington Post goes on to say, I thought other people were cute only after I developed feelings for them because of their personality. This is a really interesting comment that for some people, they don't develop feelings, attachments for someone until they get to know them more. In other words, not until there's a vested interest.
Right.
Now, this reminded me of that whole debate, and it's a little bit of a side tangent. Can guys and girls just be friends? Because some people say no, because if you spend enough time with just one person, authentic attraction can develop out of familiarity.
Yeah, and this is correct. Guys and girls cannot just be friends. I know that might seem a little unpopular, but it's true. I mean, you and I are a perfect example of that. We were in college. We were just friends. You would drive me to class every day. And it was just you and I in the car every day, back and forth from class. And that's really how our relationship started.
Familiarity. Getting to know each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that in an isolated event, guys and girls cannot just be friends. But when you're in a group setting, that's totally fine. But that's it. There's no other parameters.
All the guys are like, yes, See, honey, I told you so. Because I was one to push back on this. I remember when we were dating, we would have massive debates with our friends about whether or not guys and girls could be friends. And I think it's important, even entering into marriage, if you're going to be friends with someone of the opposite sex, that needs to be a friend of the marriage, not just of one of the spouses.
Yeah.
That's where it becomes problematic. And it's funny because people have really criticized Vice President Mike Pence over the fact that he won't go to a lunch or a dinner alone with a woman. But he's really trying to honor his marriage. Mm-hmm. And we live in a culture where familiarity breeds attraction.
Yeah, absolutely. What Mike Pence was doing was correct. I'm not going to spend my personal time with another woman if I'm married. That's not correct in any way. And it's weird that our culture is combating that, saying that that's wrong.
Coming back to this demisexual definition, again, if you're just joining us, demisexual, I'm reading this Huffington Post article, has to do with describing the fact that you identify your attraction with first being emotionally attached to someone and having a connection before there's any attraction. Now, it's interesting because some people think that, well, something must be wrong with me if I don't have the hots for someone just based on appearance. And we could talk to that, and we'll touch on that a little bit more in a minute here. But here's something that the author said. There was no inkling of sexual physical attraction to people I didn't know very well, even after puberty. And she goes on to share that it wasn't until she was 16 years old that for the first time in her life, quote, someone was really invested in who I was to my very core and wanted to know everything about me. This was a turning point for her. All of a sudden, she was attracted to someone who took a vested interest in her. Yet she thinks she has to have this demisexual definition for herself and identity because she wasn't attracted to him before that.
Yeah, this is funny because once she turned 16 and she was in that relationship, that was the very first normal relationship that she had.
What do you mean by normal?
Normal as in just learning about each other and just growing in that type of relationship of just learning who each other are. That's a normal thing, but because of the culture that we're in, a normal relationship is in fact abnormal.
This is the pace of a normal relationship. We meet, we fall into bed together that night, we hook up a little, we determine whether or not we want to have an open or closed, committed, non-committed relationship. We're not sure because we haven't had that DTR, define the relationship talk. And so we are speaking a language with our bodies that actually contradicts the fact that we're body and soul. And the two can't be disconnected. And so I think the problem is that she's seen this level of attraction that's happening more so on the level of the intellect, the soul, and the coming to know a person fully for who they are rather than reducing them to their body parts.
Yes, exactly.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. My guest today is my husband, Gabriel, here on Relevant Radio. One other thing that stood out to me about the fact that this woman said she wasn't actually attracted to someone until they took a vested interest with her actually appealed back to the topic we were discussing yesterday on Trending with matchmaker Christina Pineda, and that is generational sin and the brokenness of our upbringing and how that can impact the dating game and marriage. Because when I think about it, often people will not, in fact, their ability to develop an attachment can be stymied by the fact that there was some sort of psychological delay in their development. There was a wound, perhaps a sexual, emotional, or psychological abuse that can really influence and pull away from an attraction developing naturally. And so for some people, even if, for example, we discussed yesterday the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't learn unconditional love from their parents at times. And so it's difficult for them to think, wow, is this person actually safe? So that attraction on a physical level can be, again, blocked slightly because of a wound from the past. That doesn't make you, quote, demisexual or part of the LGBTQ community. It just means that you are responding perhaps to some wounds, and therefore you're feeling out a relationship saying, is this safe? Am I comfortable? Will this person actually be interested in me and not leave me? And you need to know these things before you will enter into any type of commitment or allow yourself to be interested and open to the other person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's important to know that what's happening is in fact supposed to happen. And by that, I mean not hooking up with somebody and then just doing the physical stuff before everything else, knowing that there's another way to do things. And that other way is, I just want to know you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
That is the correct way to go. And I think people need to hear that, because in our culture today, all we know is you need to hook up.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, many girls in particular, even if they don't want to engage in premarital sex, they will actually think something's wrong with them if the man they're dating is not trying for something.
Right.
And that's a sign of the brokenness of our culture. There's another tangent I want to touch on here, and it has to do with birth control for a moment, because we know that birth control actually reduces your libido as a woman and can actually influence based on that hormonal complement between the man and the woman and the pheromones. It not only can reduce the woman's libido, but it can also reduce the libido of the man that she is dating and romantic with. And so we're seeing this decrease not only in people who are, you know, dating and not necessarily as interested in sex or exploring other dimensions of their sexuality, but even within marriage, they're finding within the therapy room that couples will be there for couples therapy and the question will bring up, how long has it been? And they can't even remember. And it's connected back to this long-term use of birth control. And so what we see with this is that even birth control and other substances that we're using, they're actually impacting the law of attraction and the type of attraction we have in one another. Mm-hmm. So this is a total outside influence in addition to some of those already kind of wounded, broken elements that can get in the way of, quote, physical attraction.
Yeah, there's a reason why we're at the point of identifying our sexuality when, in fact, we're just discovering new things about ourselves. We have this habit of, or like this reflex, like, oh, this isn't okay, or oh, I'm unique, or this is something that nobody else is experiencing. But in fact. There's a natural progression forward.
Maybe you feel like your own sexuality is broken and confused. This is a challenge that many of us have, to relearn what it is with regard to what's our body, what is right, what is true, entering into the idea that we are a body and soul and the two can never be disconnected. This is why this quote, definition of demisexuality and, quote, following my, quote, body's inclination is problematic, because it's to say that the body and soul don't have a complementarity within the body, that they're not necessary, and that there's no purpose. And so this is where I truly believe turning back to understanding the law of attraction, healing family wounds, turning to the sacraments, spiritual direction, reading incredible books such as Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love by Ed Suree, turning to Catholic therapists when you really think that there's something going on that is off with your sexuality, or being able to form solid connections, we need to be willing to reach out for those resources in a culture that is telling us that it's okay to kind of just do whatever you want and identify in whatever way you want, when in reality, these little kind of things that seem off are actually pointing to some healing that needs to occur. I'll be right back with my husband, Gabriel, here on Trending with Tim Ray, and we're going to talk about some marriage trends and actually how this ties back to the previous topic and religion.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
A report has come out that in the United States, 2019, marriage rates have plunged to an all-time low. My guest today is my husband, Gabriel, and we're looking at these numbers. And you saw this, and you really wanted to discuss it, because these are our peers who aren't getting married.
Right. Honestly, this is yet another red flag that Western civilization is slowly eroding. Because first off, we know that prayer in the home now seems irrelevant in our culture, which prevents a just and virtuous family to flourish. And this actually leads to families to pursue a life that is just comfortable and easy. And a comfortable and easy life leads to effeminate men. And when the men become effeminate, they cannot be leaders. And if you can't be a leader, then you cannot perform the duties of leading your family to a just and virtuous life. So the family suffers because of it.
It's interesting, as I'm looking at the numbers to give you a picture here, for every 1,000 unmarried adults in the United States, back in 1970, 86 of them would get married. Now, today, only 33 out of every 1,000 unmarried adults got married in 2019. That's less than half, almost a third of what it was before, and just in 50 years. So yeah, we've seen a decrease by more than half of people getting married in the last 50 years. Now, one of the top reasons mentioned for this are, quote, strained finances. So people are choosing to live in unique housing situations often, which, again, this one doesn't make sense. I'll move in with him or her, but I won't marry them. In fact, I remember a couple years ago, it was devastating to see someone who I had gone to school with decided to move in with her boyfriend. She had all the tools in terms of her education, Catholic education, and no otherwise, but it really spoke to the brokenness and fear that exists behind the scenes for so many people today because of their own broken family makeup. Right. You know, for her, it was the influence of not having her father in the picture.
Yep.
And her mother being limited in terms of her involvement for other reasons. And so it showed that she was willing to move in with someone. She wanted to go there. She wanted to get married, but she was settling because it was comfortable for her because she was afraid of that commitment. And so she used strained finances as the reason.
Right. And I like how you said she was afraid to commit, because that stems from this inability to build trust within a relationship. And not having that ability to trust the other person, it develops this profound fear of everything else. Like, oh yeah, you know, let's just move in together because my finances, or, mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm still trying to figure out who you are. So let's just continue to hook up and whatever and live together. And if I don't like you later on, I could just leave. And that, again, stems from this lack of trust.
Mm-hmm. Our own story, too, in a sense, could be a part of this statistic. We could say, you know, we ended up delaying getting married because of financial strain. You know, both of us have student loans, and many people are having to wait to get married or even be open to marriage because of that. And so, you know, it's not just that people are afraid, it's that it's difficult in today's culture.
Yeah, it's difficult, but also me waiting to marry you, that was wrong. You know, I'll totally call myself out on that. That was wrong. We should have got married earlier. Because at the end of the day, the financial part, it's always going to be there. For someone that is in that same position, your finances, it's okay. At the end of the day, it's okay. You'll figure it out. And having that support from your wife, it's actually even better because you now have a mission and you are now more driven to succeed. It naturally just plays itself out, which is really, really nice to see in our relationship.
And it's not to say blindly, like, honey, we have no money, let's just get married. And a lot of people have done that. But to take a level of responsibility of saying it does not have to be perfect.
Right.
I'm willing to change my, I'm willing to adapt to cost of living. I'm willing to adapt to make sacrifices. I'm willing to actually budget. And that's another thing. There's a huge sense of money illiteracy, finance illiteracy among our generation, that part of it has to do with poor planning or understanding that there have to be boundaries with regard to finances.
Right. At the end of the day, it's like the best way to just, as like a stepping stone for finances, it's like, do you need it? No. Okay, don't buy it.
but that's not our generation. It's not our peers.
That's, you know, true.
We see people choosing a different lifestyle that can be challenging on the family, because sometimes we're not willing to sacrifice the things we want. I'll never forget a guest I had last year. Brooke Taylor was here on the show, and she was talking about how, yeah, you know, we grew up, my mom was home, and she said, my family, we didn't go out to eat a ton. My mom had one nice dress. And she talked about the simplicity of the family. Did we want for anything? No, but it was a lifestyle that was chosen and lived differently in order for our family members to be present to one another.
I like that. I feel like even if we had like a ton of money, I'd still want to live like that. There's some type of peacefulness and simplicity to your home that just seems so warm and inviting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a part of that simplicity movement. I think people, although they still have this desire for material things, at the same time, there's this desire for cleanliness within the house, a simplicity movement, you know, detaching, decluttering, getting rid of the hoarding techniques that so many of us have developed, that it points to there actually is a desire not to have everything. But the problem is that we're not training our self-control in order to match that bigger picture longing.
Right. Yeah, I think it all stems back from or back to just that comfortable life of, oh, like I need this because it just suits my lifestyle. And that's just that shouldn't be the case.
Okay, so there's a comment that people make, and that is specifically men, modern day women aren't worth it. So I am stepping out of the dating game. Now with the most recent Women's March, the nasty lady hats, and also those people where you go, wow, I know I love working with young adults, especially teenage boys, where they say, man, have you ever seen this woman where she's just like hot? And then you talk to her and she's just really actually quite ugly.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, like, okay. So there's legitimacy to why men say that, because honestly, like, our culture is against us. It's against the men, because feminism now is this new secular religion. And part of their creed is that marriage is like a symbol of submission to the patriarchy. And really the real struggle that we're all combating here is this one question. It's like, okay, what's the point of marriage if we can just move in together?
Mm-hmm.
So
he will submit to me.
Yeah. I mean, and so like the real question here is, it's basically, how do we argue for virtue when nobody cares?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's now our culture, it's like, what is virtue?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I can just hook up with you.
That's my husband, Gabriel. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. This leads directly into one of the comments that was made. I was reading an article from the Daily Wire, and it was showing statistics having to do with religion and millennials. Listen to this. 1 out of 3 young adults have never attended any type of religious service growing up. This points to this disconnect with regard to marriage, because it points to, we don't get what marriage is. We are not being taught that we are loved unconditionally by someone else, that is God, and we're created to be with him. And we don't understand that marriage is a covenant before God, and it actually has a purpose. And that purpose has to do with children. Contraception has taken babies out of sex, and sex outside of marriage, abortion's a fail-safe. And so people go, well, I have no orientation or requirement for kids. So they themselves are naturally getting marriage isn't necessary because we aren't having babies.
Yeah, 100%. And I think like at the end of the tunnel here, that light, it's very clear to see. God is our end. We are designed to know him more. And when we don't, and when we deny him, we are now living in where we are today.
Mm.
And so I think that's hopeful, right? Because now we know what the objective is. Now we know for men, we know what our mission is, to lead our families back to God.
Mm. And that's profound. I think that that's the moment where people are hungry for that, but they're asking, where am I going to find this? And this is, I think, the lesson. If you find yourself single, if you find yourself frustrated, if you find yourself married and you wish that you had this quote unquote Catholic ideal, surround yourself with other people who desire the same thing. Because there's this, Patrick Coffin talks about it all the time, that you're the compilation of the five people you spend the most time with. And it's true. We act according to how those people we're closest to behave. And so it should remind us that we need to be careful who our friends are.
Right. Absolutely.
This decline in marriage and this connection to religion is incredibly profound. And it's a reminder that we have to regain that lost understanding of what marriage is. In fact, we're posting a link on social media to an episode I did a couple weeks ago talking about what is marriage? Because it's important. It has to do with children. It has to do with sacrificial love. And as I was reading this article about the decline in marriage, one of the things that stood out in the comments was that a lot of people were saying, I see that there's a lack of sacrifice. It's all about me. One person said, if he or she won't bow down to me, then I'm done. Versus the Christian understanding of our whole purpose in life is sacrificial love. And it's modeled on the Christ, life-giving, self-giving love. It's my husband, Gabriel, here with me on Trending. We'll be back on Monday to discuss the important topic of whether or not religion makes us happier or not.